Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Tuning in to We Talk Productions. Sorry, y'all, I had a little technical difficulty. But thank you for tuning in to We Talk Productions, one of the only stations talking about black problems and black solutions. You're listening to The Elephant in the Room, and I'm your host, Shaka Zulu, a.k.a. Jamarian Harris. Tonight's episode, I have a few guests, a few sisters or whatever that I have coming on, and a brother or so, and we're going to be discussing why do black families like to sweep things under the rug? Why do black families like to sweep things under the rug? And it, what happens as a result, the children are left with the issues to deal with it and to figure it out on their own. And as a result of the trauma, trauma shows in many different forms. You can have a quiet person that's really quiet. It doesn't talk to many people all the time. But trauma shows in many different forms. Some people like to sex it away. Some people like to drink it away. Some people like to abuse it away. You see, some people like to eat it away. It's many different variations of our pain that we have and that we're stuck to deal with. And so I want to play this clip real fast. I want to play this clip. And I'm going somewhere with it. It's a 16-year-old sister telling her mother about her mother's boyfriend trying to touch on her. And it's not about the clip that y'all are about to listen to. It's about them being representatives of people that does things like this. So check this out. It's like 2 minutes. Check it out. Now, I play that for a reason, y'all. I have a friend, a homegirl, right? She was 14 years old, and she was touched on by her mother's boyfriend. And I told this story to some other people before, and on Facebook or whatever. And she went to her mother, and she told her mother what happened. Her mother, fast forward, ended up kicking her out. Her little 11-year-old sister that was 11 at the time when she was 14, 2 years later when her 11-year-old sister turned 13, the same boyfriend that her mother kept and took his side, like this lady that you just heard take her man's side, it happened to her, well, her 13-year-old daughter that was 11 at the time when it happened to her 14-year-old sister. And when it happened to the 13-year-old little girl that used to be 11 at the time, she was sent to her grandparents' house because her and her older sister doesn't have the same family. They, like, so-called half-sisters. And so one was kicked out the house. She was in the streets ever since, 14. Many babies, doing drugs, messing with drug dealers. Then another aspect, the younger girl that it happened, her younger sister, her mother sent her to the grandparents' house, right? Messing with this man, whooping her tail, and all these crazy things, right? But there's a lot of trauma that happened to these sisters, and it was never talked about. It was never dealt with. We never got no therapy. We never got anything to help us out. I remember telling my friend, because he was telling me about some problems of his, right? And I was saying, like, you've been with your girl for 20-plus years, and y'all have 3 children. Won't you get married? And he was like, man, he flipped on me. And believe it or not, there's nothing else that I said. And he flipped on me. And I like, won't y'all go get therapy or counseling? He like, man, what the F I look like going to somebody and I know more about myself than they know? I said, you're right. I said, but if you tell them the truth, that's where their expertise will kick in at. You see what I'm saying? And so, you know, we're left with the grenade. We're left with the grenade, and it explodes in many different ways. Right. I remember, check this out, real fast story, a personal story. I'm going to get to the callers in a second. I just want to set the tone. Right. And so, for example, with me, I didn't get molested growing up, but I suffered from another aspect of sweeping things up under the rug and shutting myself off. What do I mean? You have the golden child, you have the scapegoat, and you have the narcissistic parent. Once again, y'all, I'm going to expound on it. You have the golden child, you have the scapegoat, and you have the narcissistic parent. Now, let's go into details. I was the scapegoat. My brother was and is the golden child. Let's go deeper. The golden child could never do wrong in the narcissistic parent's eyes, but the scapegoat could never do right in the narcissistic parent's eyes, right? And what happens is, for the brothers and sisters that doesn't understand what I'm saying about narcissistic or narcissism, it's just being infatuated with something. You see, somebody that's infatuated with power, they do too much, right? So you have a parent that might be narcissistic, and they are narcissists, meaning that they take siblings and turn one against the other, but in their mind, they're not doing this and it's not messed up intentionally. They're doing it for the betterment of whoever. And so the thing about the scapegoat, which is me, the scapegoat is the truth teller. The scapegoat is the person that holds the mirror up to the narcissistic parent that lets them know who they truly are. But the narcissistic parent might have other family members thinking that the scapegoat, oh, no, that's just them. They stressed out. You know something wrong with them. You know, then they just play it off, right? But the golden child can never do wrong. And you might have the parent that might set the siblings against each other, sibling rivalry, right? And so I have personal things. I had things that happened to me, right? And my mom, she lied on me about certain things when I stayed with my sister like years ago. And fast forward, my sister found out it was a lie, but she never apologized because we never had that conversation, because they're not the type of people to talk to in terms of going to with your problems and asking them, like, I don't think you should have did that, because it'd end up being an argument. So as a result, You learn to sweep it up under the rug. You learn to try to brush your shoulders off, right? But it went nowhere. Whatever you swept up under that rug, it stayed up under the rug, but it's going to come from up under that rug. And it shows its ugly face in many different forms. Check this out, right? I have another clip. I have this other clip, right? And so I'm going to get to the callers in a second. Check this out.
I'm the only child to my mother and father, and my dad always worked. So instead of me being a daddy's little girl, I was always a mama's girl. And I was a normal size child until the age of 5. Because there was one time where we was at my uncle's house, and I was molested by my cousin. I didn't know as a child what was going on. Sinead had came from the basement, and she started kind of whining, and she was touching her front area. She was hurting. All I remember is my mom had sent me to the doctor because I couldn't use the bathroom. It was hurting really bad, and that's when she found out. Inside, I felt terrible, but I just hid all my feelings in. I started sneaking food right after that incident. Food made me feel better. It made me feel happy. So then I started putting on weight. And when I was 7, I was about 130 pounds. When I was in elementary, my teacher did throw away my lunch because I was too fat. It felt very humiliating. And that made me eat more. She would take food from the refrigerator and take it back to her room, and we would find like bones either in the couch or in the bed, underneath the bed. I got very heavy, and when I was 11, I was around 160. I was larger than all the rest of the kids, so I used to get picked on for being heavy.
And so I just wanted to play that real fast. I'm going to get to the callers in a second. My show tonight is 2 hours. It's from 8 to 10, 8 p.m. Eastern time. And so, because this is a very important conversation, I just want to set the tone. Now, the sister was just saying how food is like her comfort. Food makes her feel good. It's like her best friend, right? And so people picked on and the sister, because I know y'all didn't see it, y'all heard it. She weighed 600 pounds, a black sister. She weighed 600 pounds. Now, the people that got the most access to us as children is friends of the family and as family members. And so as a result, somebody that might be sick or have some type of sexual crazy fantasy, they take it out on those children. But the child doesn't know what's actually being done to them, especially after they grow up and realize what was done, right? So we have to go into the root. We can't focus on the trees and the leaves. We have to focus on the root before it became a tree with leaves. We have to go into it, and it starts at the family. It's even deeper than that when you're dealing with slavery and the psychology and the mental health problems that we have, right? And so I remember listening to Carrie Kelly, R. Kelly brother, and he was talking about how their 16-year-old sister, because he was 6 at the time, R. Kelly was 10, Bruce, which is the older brother, he was 12, and Carrie Kelly, which is the younger brother, he was talking about how the older sister, Teresa, that was 16, used to make sure R. Kelly and his older brother was outside playing when she did things to him, and vice versa. And he, long story short, he was just saying that he knew it was wrong, but he didn't know what she was doing because he was 6 years old. And so fast forward, he said that he called his sister one day, or his sister called at the hospital because her son got shot. Teresa's son, R. Kelly, them sister's son got shot, like in 1993, 1994. And Carrie Kelly received a call from the sister, or vice versa, and he was talking to her on the phone, and he said, "I remember what you did, but I forgive you." And she said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "What you did to me, I'll never forget, but I forgive you." And she said, what are you talking about? He said, you molested me. You touched on me. And she said, don't you never call me again. Don't you never talk to me. And till this day, he said, they ain't never talked to this day, right? This is what we're dealing with. When you choose to go to our people and your family and talk to them about things, you get shunned. You're told that you're crazy. I thought my father was my father until I was 27 years old, y'all. I'm 38 years old now. I was born in 1980, December the 12th. I found out through the grapevine, through my cousin, because this is some other stuff that was swept up under the rug. I thought that my father was my father until my cousin came to me one day at one of his cookouts. And him and his wife, they was married at the time. He's divorced now. They was married at the time. And he was telling me. And they brought me in the living room of their condo. And he was like, yeah, man, I want to talk to you, man. I ain't supposed to be telling you this, but, man, yeah. I was talking to my mom, and she was just saying that such and such and such, whatever my mom name is, she was like that she should be ashamed of herself for having him thinking that he's your father the whole time, knowing that the cab driver dude was your father. Just so happened my aunt that did 26 years in prison, she had got out in 2007, and this was a little bit after that. And, And so just so happened the cab driver guy that she was getting a ride from was the guy that used to talk to my mom. This is crazy, right? And so I asked my mom about it, and she told me at first they used to talk or whatever, and then we got mad in an argument one day, and I told her about everything because my cousin told me what his mom said, which is the older sister. And everything clicked because my dad, my so-called dad, used to tease me like, man, when you was born, I don't know, man, when you was born, he used to tease me about that because I look different and I think different and I'm very different from my other brothers, eight brothers and sisters, right? And so, but it was swept under the rug. All the older sisters knew about it. But no one came forward and told me that, right? That's some pain for your ass. So I'm going to read this real quick. Martin Luther King, a quote Martin Luther King said, y'all, it got everything to do with why black families sweep things under the rug. Martin Luther King said, there comes a time when silence is betrayal. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends and family. I love Martin Luther King. Let me say that one more time, because that matches my show tonight. Why do black families sweep things under the rug? Martin Luther King said, I quote, there comes a time when silence is betrayal. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends and families. You know, and so I'm going to get to the callers. Press 1 if y'all have a question or anything. And so since my internet, everything is not working like I want it to be, Brother Kenny helping me out tonight, shout out to him. His shows come on every Tuesday at 8 p.m. on We Talk Production. Yeah, Brother Kenny, you can unmute everybody.
They got question marks. 1258. You welcome to the elephant in the room. Last four numbers are 1258. Hello.
Hello, can y'all hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you. Go right ahead.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to say a few things, just to give people a little bit of encouragement and to let them know that actually a change can be done within this situation. It is a bad situation that a lot of things is swept under the rug in the black community, in our families, the dark things at that. However, there is a light at the end of that tunnel. You can get out of it. My name, guys, is Dion. That's my birth name, Dion Williams. I do call myself Queen Andy. I was, too, molested. Well, I ain't gonna say molested. I was touched by my uncle, my great uncle. And when he first touched me, he touched my breast. It didn't dawn on me that that's what he was doing. I was 12. It didn't dawn on me. That was my favorite uncle. I think that later on that night, it also didn't dawn on me that he had the boys to sleep on the bed and the two girls sleep on the floor with him, myself and my sister. In the middle of the night, I felt his fingers in my private area. So I got up. I woke up. I ended up sliding myself and my sister under the bed so we can finish sleeping the rest of the night. Like I said, we was at family house. So fast forward, I think I'm like 22. That's when I decide to say something. I decide to confront him and the family with it. I spoke up. At first, I was deemed, you know, you wrong, you shouldn't bring up that, that's old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle's calling me, telling me I was wrong, I shouldn't have brought up something. And I'm like, it's mighty funny that it's wrong because it's me, but if it was your daughter, would it be wrong then? You know, and I said that to them. But what happened was I made my uncle admit what he did. I made him look at himself in a negative. I forced him to come to terms at what you did. And we're not just going to sweep this shit on the road, not with me. I don't sweep things on the road. We come and put this on the forefront. It's going to be talked about. We're going to deal with it. And that's what happened. We dealt with it. That was back in 2008, possibly. 2019 now, I still talk to my uncle. I actually minister to him. We talk consciousness. I kind of brought him out of the darkness into the light. And I did that because I still loved him, but I needed him to understand that he hurt me and that I forgive him. But I wasn't going to hold it over his head. I wasn't going to make it be detrimental in my life. I wasn't going to allow myself to go down a negative path because of something that I went through. And we all are different.
Yeah.
It was just that I was much more strong-minded to fight through it and force him to acknowledge what he done. And I forced the family to acknowledge the shit, too. We're not sweeping this under the rug. So I just want to let people know that they can do the same thing. It's not hard. It might be hard because you do have a lot of people will gain up on you, and that's cool, man. It's understandable. That's how people are. That's their thinking. We got to understand that as well. That's just certain people, that's the way they think. It's sad, but come on, we've been living in these white folks with these white folks for so long, they start to bring on the mentality of their thinking. So, I mean, I just wanted to say that.
Now, before you leave, though, sister, a story real fast, just like the child molestation in my family. I was never molested, but I remember one of my cousins was 19, and he impregnated another young girl that was a friend of the family and that my aunt took in because her mother was on drugs. And she was 12 when she was pregnant, and I think she was 13 when she had the baby. And so he was messing with her the whole time. Her whole childhood was taken away from her. They ended up having two more children together and ended up being together. Now, I heard of people that got molested, sisters that got molested before and had children by the person that molested them, but I never really heard someone that had more children and they had a relationship with each other that was publicly, that was known after she became even older in her late teens and early 20s and when they was together. You see what I'm saying? And so every time they fast forward, they're not together now. And he was telling me the other day, my cousin was telling me the other day, man, every time I talk to her, because she don't have no relationship with her older daughter. Now, the reason she don't have no relationship with her older daughter, because the older daughter is, when she was molested, that was the child that she had. So throughout her teenage years, the little girl getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and in her early 20s, When the mother growing up in her early 20s, it was a sour relationship. So to this day, they don't speak, right? So when my cousin was talking to me, because of course he changed and people do things, but you know, but at the same time, he was telling me, like, every time I talk to her, man, she don't listen. She keep bringing up what I did to her back in the day, what I did. No, I said, listen, stop, because you're not the victim. So it's easy for the person that's the victimizer or that, because this is what black folks like to do. Black folks do something like a rape or a molestation, and they run to the church. They run to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm saying, another family member I got on the other side, he touched on his wife's 13-year-old daughter in 2013, and him and his wife are still together to this day, even though she pressed charges on him, and he has to register himself as a sex offender. But they are together to this day, and the only thing that he changed, he said he don't drink no more. and he an usher in the church. What is the pattern here? We skip over the person that we did the wrong to, and we jump to the God figure. You know what I'm saying? We don't right the wrong that we did with the person, and we like to jump to the religion, right?
Right.
And the person is left with the grenade. That person, that child, that individual, that little girl, that little boy, they are left with the grenade. What am I going to do with this? I don't know. You figure it out. And I move on with my life. So when my cousin kept saying, she keep bringing up what I did to her when she was younger, he said, I was telling him what I'm saying now. I said, we need to get family counseling. And I was telling him some real stuff. I said, your mom, because she was the guardian, and you, her, and your oldest daughter that she don't have no relationship with. I ain't no psychologist or nothing. I'm just using my common sense. Because I got help before. I got therapy before. And I know 99.9% of black folks that I talk to about this don't want to go get no counseling or therapy. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, because like my homeboy told me when I told him to get therapy one day, he was like, man, why would I go to somebody and tell them, and I know more about myself than they know. You know, just ignorant things. You know,
right.
So black folks don't want to go get no help, and we don't realize the victims and what we done to them and how things transpire over time. Because for him to say, she keep bringing this up about what I did back in the day, that right there alone, I could talk about that for days. Because that
right.
shows that you don't understand. You think, oh, because you changed. Oh, because she started doing crack at one time. She started doing drugs. She started doing powder. She has like three different children's fathers. She thought one was the father. And so we could talk about her all day, right? We could talk about the
right.
person all day. But what transpired in that person's life that made them like that? And a lot of us don't want to have that conversation. We don't want to talk about it. And we only talk about it when we get mad at each other as a people. Fuck, F you. That's why you did it. No. Let's have the conversation. And I might not need to be involved in the conversation, but y'all need to go get some help. Because she's tremendously affected by it, and it spilled over to her daughter to where they ain't got no relationship. But how can we solve it? We got to go back to the root. Ain't no need to talk about a spider web if we ain't going to address a spider. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true.
So what you got to say a little bit about that, sister, before I get to some other callers? I'm going to get back to you, too,
I totally agree with you. That is true. I was just giving my situation. It almost sounds like as if you're right. He changed, so he feel like everybody else to change or get over it because I done got over it. But that's not always the case. People can't get over trauma. You know, you can't get
yeah.
over things that put a damper over your cloud. You can't. It's hard.
Yeah.
I was just giving a view of how I handle it. But yeah, I totally agree with you, brother. I totally agree. One of the other things that I wanted to also say, too, and it has nothing
yeah.
really to do with molestation, but I wanted to talk about parents on drugs. That put in my life growing up, that was like my cloud. My mom and father was on crack, and it played a big role in my life. I was always angry because of that. I was so angry at her, but I was
yeah.
raised up to respect my parents, and I always did. I always have. But I was so angry at her because of the things that she was doing, and I felt like I couldn't change it. So I would go out and get in confrontations with anybody I saw, honestly. It got to the point where I had God spoke to me and told me if I don't change my ways, I was going to either be 6 feet under or in prison. Dion don't do too well in prison,
yeah.
for one. And my life wasn't going to end there. So I had to make a change, but when I bring it up to her, she still sweeps it under the rug, even to today. Even because she's not on it, she's been off of it, she's been clean for 15 years. But the fact of the matter is, I'm still suffering from the things I went through while you were on your drugs. And we still
exactly.
have not talked about it, you know.
And therefore,
so
y'all don't probably get along.
Right, right.
Because me and my mother don't get along. But my mother and my brother and my mother and my sister, they get up. That's when I was. Did you hear when I was talking about the golden child, the scapegoat, and the narcissistic parent?
Definitely.
It's a reason
oh, yeah.
why I say that because, like I said, the scapegoat is the truth teller.
That's true.
The scapegoat,
I mean,
why? Because the scapegoat is shunned all the time. The scapegoat is lied to all the time. So the scapegoat sets himself or herself off, even if they don't realize what I'm saying, but when they hear this, they're like, damn, I did do that. Mm-hmm. And the scapegoat could never do right in the narcissistic parent's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But the golden child could never do wrong.
Oh, yes.
In the
man.
Narcissistic parent's eyes. And that parent is so infatuated with power to where you have sibling rivalry. You see? And
mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, the scapegoat wants to make the parent happy.
Right, right.
And so what happens is we internalize a lot of things to where, dang, I can't go to this person and talk to them. I can't go, you know what I'm saying? And we might explode on somebody one day, like, they look at you like, man, you tripping. You know what I'm saying? And so it's many things that happen to the brain, that happen to the mind in different situations. This is why black folks, it ain't black folks and white, black men and white men, white women and white and black women, they go through the same thing. We go through the same stress and all, but guess what sets us apart? It's the level of the oppression. And it's the fact, okay, I ain't got no, what's the ratio of the black men that can't find a job? You got 42% of the population of black men, 42% of black men don't have a job. You see what I'm saying? But they keep talking about the 8% unemployment, the 8% unemployment. And so these things traumatize us on top of what happened to us in our personal lives. You see what I'm saying? And so, once again, like with the golden child, like I do not get along with my mom. Like I get along with her, but when I found out my father wasn't my father, and I asked her about it, I noticed, like, even if she was on Maury, and they would say, you are not the father. She was like, Maury, you a damn lie. The person that took it's like, yo, even if it was a camera footage of her talking, like, and the only reason why I'm saying it in that way, and I ain't trying to slay my mom, but I'm a victim here. I'm the victim. I was left with the grenade. Yeah, I'm keeping it real. You know what I'm saying? I ain't had nobody talk to me to take me up under their wing.
Right. And see, you and we kind of went through the same thing. I found out that who my real father was at 18. I found out I had another sister, a couple of brothers that I never knew anything about. I confronted my mom. She told me I need to stop being nosy and stop digging too much into things. You know?
That's crazy, man.
It's crazy. It's beyond crazy. Our people have lost their God-given mind. It's gone.
Common sense ain't common no more.
Common sense isn't common no more. Nope.
Yeah, common sense ain't that common. And look, sister, stay on the line. Just press mute on your phone.
I'm doing it. Gotcha.
My electricity out over here is, because the whole neighborhood electricity out over here. So I got the brother doing the switchboard thing for me. And so if there's any other callers, press
1. 4396 is on the line.
Do you have anything to say?
How are you?
Yeah, how you doing?
I want to say you my birthday twin. My birthday December 12th also. I'm just both born 19.
Oh, man. Sagittarius in the house.
When you said it, I was shocked. Yeah, I just want to say, I've been listening since you started the show, and I just want to add my little 2 cents in. Fortunately for myself, I was never molested either. But it's probably because my mother had been exposed to some things, and it made her that much more protective of us. Like her stepfather was sweet on her, kind of, sort of. I don't know what she went through, but it made her that much more protective of us. And I recall one night, I was about probably 11 or 12, and she had went out to the club and left us there by herself. I'm the oldest. I had a brother that was 10, and another sister 5, and another sister was probably about 2 years old. And one of her friends came by, Mr. Butch, and he asked, was she home? And I said, no. And he asked, could he come in the house and use the bathroom? And I made the mistake of saying yes. And he came in and he tried to force himself on me. And I screamed and hollered like nobody's business, and he got the hell up out of there. But as soon as my mom came home the next morning, it was weighing on me so heavy I couldn't wait 10, 20, 30, 40 years like a lot of these people have before I came out. I had to tell her right then, the very next morning, what happened. And she called Mr. Butch over there, and it was a bad day for him after that. And it came out some years later that he was molesting his nieces and nephews also. So he was just a sick person.
Oh, man.
So, and what has happened from that point is it has given me the capacity to love children. And as you know, Shock, I took in a little boy whose mother was in the system and who was molested herself. And some kind of way, the universe came in the picture to take care of this boy. And so what his mama do is she sell her body. You know, so that's the way she's dealing with her trauma, what happened to her.
And it's crazy. Real quick, let me piggyback off of something you just said real quick. I'm going to piggyback off something you just said real fast. Somebody background, can somebody mute their phone in the background? It's a lot of static. And so I'm piggybacking off what you just said. My cousin that I was speaking about that touched on the little girl when she was 13 years old, when she was 12 and she had a baby at 13 and he was 19 and they had three children and they ended up having a relationship. What happened to him as a child when they used to get babysitted, their babysitter used to tell them about eggs and grits. And I remember them talking about it. Eggs and grits was, she was like, she used to take their fingers and put it in her private part, in her poo-poo. And she said, this is eggs. And then she took their fingers and put it in her behind. And she was like, this is grits. And she would proceed to play with them and suck on their whatever. And so where I'm going with it is, growing up, when I heard my male cousins talking about molestation by a female, they were bragging about it. But the reverse with the females, 100%, that won't no shit to brag on. Fast forward, he did the same thing to her that was done to him. But go ahead, sister.
Yeah, that's the sick part about it, is it can perpetuate this bad thing that's happening. But fortunately, some people, and I think that all individuals, perceive their experiences differently. And so, like I said, for my mama, whatever had happened to her made her that much more protective of us. Instead of just turning a blind eye, whatever, she could see a hound a mile away. And I thought it was peculiar that every time we spent the night at my grandmother's house, we all had to sleep in my grandmother's room in her bed with the door locked. My granddaddy slept in a separate room. Well, years later, it came to fruition why that was, because he has some sick ways about himself. So the children had.
Oh, my God. Hold on. One more time, sister. What I heard what you just said, but say that again.
We had to be protected. The children have to be protected.
She made y'all lock the door.
We all had to sleep in my grandmother's room in her bed when we spent the night in my grandmother's house for the weekend.
And you never knew that until later
my
in your life.
Slept right. And it was because, you know, he had his eye on my mama when she was younger. So my grandmother knew this. So they knew to always be watching the children. So he never.
And but she stayed with him. So she stayed with him.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. Obviously, that was her. That was her way of sustaining her life, because she was an uneducated, illiterate woman. Yeah.
That goes to what I just said. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, what the sister was saying earlier about coming up and having a parent addicted to drugs, I can feel her on that. But there is also a golden line to that, too, because my mother's 20 years in her sobriety now, because she was addicted to crack cocaine also. And she was able to, with the few brain cells she had left, go back to school and become a registered nurse and go into the hospital and help heal people herself. So, and she's able to say, I'm a crack addict, and I'll always be an addict, and be real with herself. And so I'm hoping that the sisters who chimed in, I'm hoping her mother will get to that point also, because it starts with being honest. That's where it starts. If you're not going to be honest, it ain't worth a damn wasting your time talking at all about it. You can't move forward if you're not going to be honest. So
exactly.
But, yeah, that's where it starts. We got to be honest. We got to protect the children. We gotta always have that in our mind. But I know some people have been, you know, compromised and things didn't happen. It's hard to do that. But you gotta keep an eye on those people that could be potential, you know, risk. It, you know, no matter who the hell it is, could be a brother, their mother, their sister. I don't care who it is, because you just can't take that chance.
And then, and like I say, once you try to open yourself up and you try to talk to your family or whoever that did what they did, you're shunned. You're looked down upon. You get ostracized. They look at you like, oh, here she comes. She's going to start drinking and start talking about that molestation shit. And she's going to start drinking. Whether that person was drinking or not, it needs to be talked about. And I'm not talking about in a mad way like we angry at each other. Like, we need to talk about this. Grandma ain't coming through that door. And grandma ain't even the grandmas ain't even the grandmas like back in the day. These are some old, and we ain't even got no elders like that anymore. You know what I'm saying? When we going to have that person, okay, you did this wrong, you know, sit that person in the hot seat. And, like, you know, how can we make this better? Because we can't go back and change it. We can't go back and – so how can we make it better? How can we make it the best that we possibly can? We got to talk about this. And it starts with a conversation. Like right now, by me talking and having my own blog talk, radio show, thanks to Brother Kenny, it is a release. By talking about things like this is a release because you can't talk to your family. 9 out of 10, because if you talk to them about it, you will end up fighting. You're going to end up cursing each other out. I know what you don't want last summer.
Defensive. They not ready, though. They're not ready when they're defensive, so you have to just accept they're not ready. But you can do the internal work for yourself, though, and you can be part of the solution for somebody else like I am being for those children. I didn't take it to his brothers now with me too because their mom in jail and their daddy in jail. But anyway, we can be a part of the solution and try to help somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. And this conversation need to be had. That's why the name of my show is called The Elephant in the Room. That speaks a mountain. I can make many thousands of shows off the elephant in the room. Because black folks, we like to look outside of the elephant and see what time empire come on. Nah, let's address the elephant in the room. You see what I'm saying? Because the conversation, our children is watching. There's no such thing as bad children. It's bad parenting. You know, these children internalize these things. These boys wearing these sagging pants, and then you got these single-parent households, and then you don't have no family structure, no value. We don't have no values of a woman, no value of a man. What we learned the hard way. You know what I'm saying? You meet somebody online, they tell you that they're a lawyer. By the time you meet them, come to find out they need a lawyer.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And so, it's so many things out here. So stay on the line, sister. Stay on the line. I got the other sister. I told her to press mute because I'm not behind my switchboard. And so stay on the line. If it's some other callers, press 1 if y'all have any questions.
You have 7643. Hold up. I can't see without my glasses. Hold up. 7648 is next. Hello. No, 7643. I was right the first time.
Yeah, that's me. Can you hear me?
Yes. What's up with your brother?
What's going on with your brother?
What's up with you?
Not much, man. Not much. Just listening in. Yeah, you ready? You ready for me to speak, or you got something else to say?
Yeah, you can go ahead. The floor is yours.
All right. True indeed. Good evening. Well, good night. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Blue Marley. About the whole sweeping thing under the rug with the black people in the community. I have a testimony of that as well. Back in 1988, my uncle Timothy Miller. he was a Marine, Marine in the Army or whatever. And he was a real popular cat, you know, growing up. They lived in a town called Roseville, North Carolina, which was very racist back in the 80s.
Right outside where I'm at. I'm in Raleigh.
Yeah.
And that's 35 minutes outside of Raleigh.
Yeah. 401 take you straight down to that little racist ass town.
Yep.
But back in 88, man, you know, growing up, my uncle was really diverse. He was really universal. You know, back in them days, black guys really liked white women more than their own sisters. And my grandma and my grandfather is a witness to that. And my uncles as well, great uncles as well. So, you know, back in the days, you know, he was, like I said, he was diverse. He dealt with white women and he dealt with black women. He didn't see no color when it came to certain people. Pretty much, I'm something similar to him. But So pretty much, long story short, like I said, he graduated from Wake Forest. He ended up going to the military, going to the Marines, and he came back home. And you know, the white folks out there back then knew who he was, knew our family very well, the Miller family. We was the only Millers in town, so it wasn't, you know, you really couldn't get us mixed up with nobody else. So, you know, he was coming back home, back and forth from where he was stationed at, you know. And, you know, back then, you know, you black man in the military, you know, you're pretty successful in them days. So, you know, he had a nice little, he had a Chevelle. I think it was a 60-something Chevelle. But anyway, the police set him up because he was dealing with one of the white women, and her father was like, I think he had a real high position within the political views out there in Roseville. So anyway, they all went to school. His daughter and my uncle went to school together. So they knew each other very, very well. But anyway, one night, you know, my uncle coming home from a party or whatever, or down Jonesville Road. This happened on Jonesville Road. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that road. But they done chopped up and ran 401 all the way down through there. So it's kind of confusing now. But anyway, my uncle was coming home. The police pulled him over, you know, and pretty much my uncle already knew what time it was because they didn't like him and they didn't like our family like that. So he pulled over, whatever. The police told him to step out the car. They didn't ask him for no license or nothing, told him to step out the car. And they pretty much tried to beat him. But what they did was he ran and he jumped in this little pond that was out there. So when he jumped in there, of course, it was other backup there, too. And long story short, the cops beat him to death in the water. They tried to say he drowned. Now, anybody that know anything about the Marines know damn well them some bitches can swim. It ain't no way you going to drown a fish. You feel what I'm saying? It ain't no way. But my family, my great-great-grandma, God bless her heart and her soul, and my great-granddaddy, they basically didn't want no trouble. You know how old folks get sometimes when they just let some things go and let some things slide because they don't want to get the town in an uproar and they don't want any more problems.
Like the sister was just talking about.
Right.
Like how her grandparents locked the door and like she must have been known how the dude was, her grandfather was. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, but go ahead.
Mind you, my grandparents had four boys and three girls. Four boys and four girls. So, you know, I guess my grandmother and my granddaddy was, you know, he was ready to shoot the town up. You know, granddaddy ain't going to really play too much. But grandma was just so scared and so more so, you know, wanted to keep the peace within the town because they knew they still had other kids to raise. You know, they didn't want no one else to be getting set up by it. But not only is my grandmother, God rest her soul, my great-great-grandmother, was she a victimizer, because I feel like that because they kept it away. But the whole damn family, you know what I'm saying? Like, they ate that shit, man, and they still affect it to this day. You know what I'm saying? Like, they get to talking about it.
And you better not talk about it.
Sometimes.
And you better not say nothing about it. And if you say something about it, you're going to be that Negro that's going to be the odd one out. Because ain't nobody trying to hear about it. Let's drink it away. Let's sex it away. Let's eat it away.
Let's beat it away. My youngest great uncle, that's his problem today. When he always get drunk. His favorite drink is Richard Wine. And he started talking about everything from 69 all the way up to 89.
But that's his
and
pain
like
body
he,
talking.
That's,
his
yeah,
pain
that's
body.
That was the era, That was the era in time where everything switched around for him, and it caused so much pain for him.
And we die in our stubbornness. We die stubborn.
Right. So you know, I'm a victim too of my family, sweeping stuff under the rug. I mean, I know we all are, but that was a little situation I wanted to share.
This is the platform where we take the stuff up from up under the rug. This is the platform where it comes from, under the damn rug.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
If I bring it up right now to this day, they'll talk about it, but they don't want to go into full depth. Because you know what? The police that Roseville police got off on that shit, man. You know they did. They looked at it. Everybody believes, even though they didn't, they believe that my uncle drowned in a damn pond, and he's a fucking Marine. Negro, they've been swimming in the ocean,
yeah,
man. You know what I'm saying? How you going to drown in a pond? Come on now. They tried to, first they tried to throw the drunkenness on him. He was drunk and drowned. He was drunk and drowned. No, man. Even Marines drunk in the military, they get drunk all day long and go to their drill in the morning. You know what I'm saying? So that was something,
yeah,
that was something that was common for him, but it just beat me. For some reason, like, it just touched me for a long time because I'm not his son. That's my great uncle. But I look so much like him. I got so many characteristics. He was a drummer. I'm a drummer.
Yeah.
Nobody in the family is a drummer. Like, a lot of stuff that I got from him, and I was born in 87. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I was here when he left, but I was like, what, probably about 14, 15 months old. But,
brother, mm-hmm. So what's the psychology of the victim? Whether you could have been molested, you could have been mm-hmm. a child that was yelled at, you could have been
a child
that was bullied.
Anything.
Because I heard mm-hmm. the story of a sister that just committed suicide. I forget which state she was in. The little young sister was like 9 or 10 years old, little black sister, beautiful sister,
right.
Committed
right.
suicide because of bullying. So
mm-hmm.
what is the trauma from all these perspectives of things that happened to us from our family? Because the family got the number one access to you. Friends of the family got the number one access to you. And outside of that, the friends that you hang with. Because I did things in my life that my mama don't even know to this day that I did. You know what I'm saying? Like, I done did some mm-hmm. things to where my mama would be like, boy, you did that. I'd be like, mom, your son is off the chain. I did that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I done did some crazy things to where my family don't even know what I did. Like, whether it's harming people. And, you know, and so luckily I'm here today and I have three wonderful children. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got therapy and I got counseling, and which it ain't nobody business for what I got it for.
Right.
I ain't sick.
Right.
I'm not a molester or anything like that. But everybody need counseling. Black folks,
everybody,
we need counseling. We need therapy. We need family counseling.
Mm-hmm. Even Dr. Phil need a Dr. Phil. Shit.
Yeah.
For real, man. For real. I'm serious.
Yeah. Yo, you ain't mine. Hey, yo, even Dr. Phil needs a Dr. Phil. Yeah, I'm going to start using
right.
that. I'm going to steal that from you, man.
Yeah, I'm right.
Even
right.
Dr. Phil.
Cool. You know,
because that's very true.
You know,
that's very true.
Something. Yeah, and I made that up myself. You'll never hear nobody else say it. But I thought about that because I always, sometimes I be here off, when I'm off work, I'm flicking through the TV, and I see Dr. Phil pop up. And he helping everybody with so much shit. And I was sitting there saying, well, who the hell helped him?
What's going on in your life?
You know what I'm saying?
You missed the perfect or something? Or you missed the perfect?
Ain't no way. Dr. Phil probably got more shit with him than the folks he interviewed, man. For real. You know, but guess what? You will never know. You will never damn know.
Yeah. Hey, look.
Mm-hmm.
Stay online, brother. Press mute.
No doubt.
Because I ain't around my switchboard. We're going to get to the other caller. Stay online. We're going to get back around because my show ends at 10 o'clock.
Caller. You have another caller. 7947. You're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, sister?
Okay, I'm doing just okay. My name
What's your name
Karen.
And where you calling from?
Karen, I'm calling from Raleigh.
Okay.
And golly, I could have this conversation way past 10 o'clock. But so, yes, I've been listening to the three callers ahead of me, and, yeah, absolutely right. My family, really, my whole family, on my mama and my daddy's side, they are just sweeping everything under the whole damn carpet, not just the room, the whole carpet. Like, I'm going to tell this one. I have a aunt that was raising her grandchildren, and she had this friend who was taking care of her and the grandchildren. But with the price of them living the good life that they were living, came the child molestation with the grandchildren. And to this day, like, they are still affected by that. You can tell by their actions. It's just horrible. And nobody dared to talk about it or anything like that. And then on top of that, one of the grandchildren, the oldest, he also joins in as he got older with molesting the children as well. You know, his siblings
that's
and
the
his
trauma.
Little
that's
cousins.
That's the trauma I was just talking about when I was talking about my cousin, even though he's 38 now, when he touched on that younger girl when she was 13 and 12. And what happened to him? He got touched on by his babysitter, by the babysitter, my aunt, and you're hearing that's the grip. So people that's victims become the victimizers. But go ahead, sister.
Yeah, and so then I have a cousin, and he has had four wives. And we've always wondered, like, why does he keep, you know, doing this? Like, and he married real quick. And it's always you know, dazzle in distress type female. And he come around and he whispers sweet nothings in her ear and all that stuff. But then we find out what happened. He always molested their children.
Damn.
And so now he's on girlfriend number 5 and getting ready to marry her. And what does she have? Like, it just seems like they just prey on women with, you know, their choice and preference of what they want to deal with. But let me say this, because I've done a little study and I've looked at these characters like this now. First of all, I'm going to say this description, you know, applies to most. I'm not going to say everybody looks like this, but these are key things that I've noticed about male child molesters. I'm still working on defining the female characteristic looks about them, but I have the males down pat. One, they keep their fingernails really nubby. They don't have nails. So you need to look for that sign right there.
And they shop at Bath and Body Works.
Yes. Two, they are unattractive. And then the third one is they don't mind watching your children. One thing that I notice about black men, even the best of the fathers and stuff, they would tolerate their children. But to be giddy up about watching their children, that's never been their thing. And I've noticed those child molesters, they are willing and always able to watch your child. And you have to be conscious. I want my black sisters and brothers to understand this. You have to be conscious of those three things. I'm serious. Those are three defining factors that I have seen with child molesters.
Yeah.
Those nubby fingertips where they chewed it, fingernails all up, you know, because most of the time they keep them in their mouth and by their nose because they constantly smelling them, you know, because they do stuff all the time and not even aware that they don't even wash their hands. And then they're unattractive and, this is just horrible. And then they always just willing to watch your children. Watch your children.
Yeah.
Like, they always willing to watch your children. You can go anywhere, the West Hale, and they just willing to watch your children all the time because they're doing stuff to the children. Now, I've started looking at Ayanna Vanzant show, and oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, I know you're talking about Oprah, the lady that Oprah used to have on the show.
Yes. Her shows deal with that a lot. But those people, after talking with her, you know, they kind of, you know, seem like they can pull themselves together after being on her show. You know, sometimes there are some good outcomes because she say what they're doing, you know, since the show aired. But a lot of times they're not any good outcomes. And, Callie, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for, like, this show, because I've told everybody to listen in, and I've shared your the post on Facebook. And I hope somebody is listening that could really benefit from the elephant in the room, this child molestation topic this evening. Like, it's important. It's very important out here.
I just want to say this real quick before you get off, sister, before I get to the next caller. It's different traumas. Like, you could have been molested. You could have been yelled at, like I said earlier. You could have been abused physically, verbally. You could have seen people get abused. It couldn't have even been your parents. She could have dropped you off at somebody's house and you've seen the abuse there or at your friend's house. And so I know, for example, right, people that raised their children, or they was foster parents, they were actual parents, or they were some type of guardians, right, and they got the child out like they were crazy. But then it got to the point where them crackers started testing people to see if they actually taking their medicine and stuff. So it progressed to the point where these parents was getting these children to take all these prescriptions that they was prescribed for, like, act like you crazy now. Now, just act like you crazy. You know how that is to get the money, right?
Yeah.
And so fast forward, I told a story on Facebook Live. I know I ain't going to say he a friend of mine, but the lady that I was staying with like 4 years ago when I was in the streets, I was living with her, Miss Didi or whatever. I was living with her, and she was telling me about her brother. And even though I was still reading or whatever, but I was in the streets, I remember the story that she told me. And she was like that, that's my brother Killer, even though his name Eric or whatever. She was like, when he come and he knock on the door, don't answer the door. Let me answer the door, or I'll decide not to answer the door. I said, okay, all right. And she said the reason why, she said because since we were young, he been taking the medicine our mom was giving him or whatever, he been crazy ever since. And so after that, he been constantly in jail, constantly in prison. Like, it's a schism that happened in his brain. It's a trauma, like a total trauma that happened in his brain. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because there's a lot of parents out here and foster parents, people that pimp children, people that pimp their own damn children for ADHD medicine. My ex-girlfriend, her son, she used to get $700 a month because he was diagnosed with ADHD, which is fake or whatever, but he was diagnosed with ADHD. And he was prescribed with Depakote, Seroquel, or whatever, Risperdal, and but it does no good. It doesn't do anything. And she got it for like 3 or 4 years, and then once he turned 14, they got him off. They said that they was gonna cut a check off or whatever. The damage is being done when you understand how these people be pipping their children and what the medicine does to people, man. You know what I'm saying?
Let me say it is.
Because it gets swept up under the rug. That's another aspect of sweeping something up under the rug, man, because, like, nobody want to face the fact, oh, dang, his mama pimped. She pimped her child. And even if she didn't know no better, she did know better to know that boy really ain't crazy or that girl really ain't crazy. And you got them to take that damn medicine. Now they really is crazy. And you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, but going back to foster care, let me say this. A lot of stuff go on in foster care as well. Like, children are being molested in foster care. Like, the state don't know child molesters are foster parents until they finally are willing to accept what one of the children has said about the foster parent. And so then these children are in foster homes getting molested as well. But then when they come out of foster care, they're so traumatized.
Yeah.
You know, from foster care, they're acting out again, and then they still end up going into juvenile.
They're more likely to be in a gang. Yep.
Yes. You know, I think people need to look at foster care parents as well and stop saying,
right.
you know, oh.
And white foster parents are the number one foster the parents that foster black children. Like that that white gay couple in Minnesota.
But that's
that white
where
gay couple
all the twisted thinking came from, the Europeans.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we've been enculturated. We've been absorbed in their culture to where
exactly.
we became them. We became them.
Exactly.
Like when Carrie Kelly, when R. Kelly brother was talking about, he said when his sister was touching on him and both of them, he said R. Kelly actually liked it. He got a rise out of it. And he said that was the beginning of the monster. That's what Carrie Kelly said. And the only reason why I'm bringing it up, I don't be into all that docu-series stuff because they could do the same series on these white boys that be doing the same damn thing. And so
mm-hmm.
all I'm saying is, and I ain't for R. Kelly either. I'm not for him. I'm just saying we have to understand the game that's being played because if we don't, we're going to be lost in the sauce. We just totally
yes.
going to be lost in the sauce.
Right.
And so, sister, you can mute yourself. And the reason why I say mute yourself, because usually I do that, but I'm end the show with anybody that want to expound on anything that was talked about already. And so we can get to the next caller if anybody else has anything to say. Press number one if you have any questions.
Nobody else pressed number one, but there are two callers that remain hot. Oh, you do have another caller. K0. Okay. You do have another 0857, you're on the air.
Hi, everyone. Good evening.
How you doing, sister?
I'm doing well. I'm listening to the show, and it is very interesting. I'm a Deep South resident, and I can't say that molestation doesn't happen up north, but I know the South really holds a lot of secrets. And it goes all the way back into slavery for many of my family members and the mindset that is carried with keeping things on the hush because, first of all, the justice system didn't, you know, they didn't respond to our issues the same way. So who could you really tell anyway?
Mm-hmm.
And by the time, you know, our uncles had babies with the nieces and the, you know, children's, the oldest children, not the nine, you know, the oldest children, not the nine, and the oldest children, not the 13, and you didn't know who your cousin was because he was actually your brother. You know,
man,
you find out these things
crazy.
Much later. And, of course, like you all said, it's a hush. It's a understood. And the person is
yep.
left to suffer in silence. And I often look at, though I was not personally one of those who was molested, I looked at the pain that others suffered. But I also
yep.
see this trend happening to Black America as a whole, where we are learning how to suffer in silence. You know, we've been taught to take everything
yep.
to the Lord in prayer,
hold it
and use it at the altar. You know, we get real religious and spiritual when it comes to leaving things quiet, and that means God will
but it never went anywhere.
God will bring justice.
It never went anywhere.
And it never goes anywhere. And, you know, in almost every phase of our lives, we are asked to pick up our lives and move on, but we're never allowed to address the oppressor in any matter, whether it's family,
yeah.
whether it's our bosses, whether it's
what
our
about
husbands.
You? What about you? Yeah. That's what
yes. Eddie said. Right, right. Or, you know, and that again, what did you do wrong? What did you wear? How did you provoke? Oh, you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Even at
and that
your
child's
job.
Mind, because that child is just learning how to be a child. They can't even do the things that an adult does. If you leave them on their own, they can't even survive. But in the adult's mind, like in my mind right now, you drop me off in
mm-hmm.
the city. Okay, I might be struggling right then if you just drop me off in the middle of the city. But guess what? Give me a month. Give me a couple of weeks. I ain't going to do nothing illegal. I'm going to find me a job. I'm going to do something because I know how to make it work. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so a lot of us, we don't have that person to take us up under their wing. We don't have that person
right.
to tell us what happened to them. We don't have these conversations. So as a result, shit, I'm going to learn on my own. And guess what? The reason why we're having this main conversation now, because we had to learn on our own. We had to learn through our own mistakes, because experience is the best teacher.
Really
when
is.
A student is ready to learn, the teacher will appear. And so I had to go through what I went through to get to the point that I'm at now. I had to go through what I went through to get to the point that I'm at now, just like everybody else.
Right.
It might not be in a place that I want to be at, but the things in the past, and like I was talking about the golden child, the scapegoat, and the narcissistic parent, like just being a victim, being a scapegoat, and having a radio show where I could talk about it, but to my own people and my own family, I can't talk about it. Not being belligerent, not getting mad and then bringing this up. Because the worst time to bring something up about child molestation or anything is when you mad at somebody. What? F-U-M-F? I remember when you did this. No. That's not the time. But this is a conversation that needs to be had. And I'm not no psychologist. But I am in terms of what happened to me and the experience I got. But you can keep speaking, Sophie. You were just saying something that I wanted to speak about.
Oh, no, you're doing well. I was just saying, you know, the overall culture of what we've built through all of the molestation as a people, you know, from the personal down to almost every, you know, facet of our lives, we've been scarred so bad in how we've been treated. I mean, whether it's from an uncle, whether it's down to another culture, we've just been mistreated so bad until now we just sort of wear these battle scars. And then I think for me, I don't like this new terminology they've placed in, you know, along with the healing, is that you're a resilient people. So now we're expected to weather through it. So you're resilient.
Yeah.
You bounce back. I mean, so we have to wear the banner of just brush yourself off. You know, everybody else can go get therapy. Everybody else is allowed to, you know, have PTSD. The veterans are allowed to have PTSD. Everybody's allowed to fall apart. Everybody's allowed to be a damsel in distress. Everybody's allowed to pop as many pills as they want to. But Black culture is not allowed to mourn. They're not allowed to fall apart. They have to wear the mental illness. They can't even get diagnosed. So we are really looking at an injustice that we are, as a people, getting raped in so many different areas, and we're just not allowed to express that. And so tonight I really want to say thank you, and I appreciate the stories, you know, because they are real stories and they deserve to be heard. People deserve to be listened to. And I really like the fact that the young lady said she told her uncle, "I love you, but I have to put this, you have to know this hurt me." I think that's fair. And that's the beginning of healing, when we can shout out as loud as we can, "You hurt me," and we're not moving no further till you deal with this.
Yeah, you're right.
So thank you all for your stories.
All right. Thank you, sister. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so, look, everybody else, how you doing? What's your name and where you calling from? Hello?
That's it, Shaka. For other people that already came on the air, they're still on the air, so you can continue with them.
Okay. Y'all can unmute your phone?
No, you're already hot.
Okay. If y'all have anything to say, if y'all want to chime in, y'all have any other statements to make, and we just go back and forth, you can speak on it.
You just got another listener that wanted to say something.
Okay.
3402.
Good evening.
You're on the air.
Yeah, what's your name and where you calling from?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Ajua calling from Raleigh. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How you doing?
Okay, good. How are you? Sorry, my voice is going out, but I just want to say that this was definitely a powerful session. I think it's very important that we as a community start to talk about these things, because like you said, it is swept under the rug, and it goes on for so many years. And if it's not prevented, then it just continues. The cycle continues to go on. I would also like to ask other, like outside of the show, do you plan on doing something like as a community to?
Yes. Yes. I love your question so much, sister. I love that. That's what I'm talking about. Yes, I'm in the organization, KCSSU, here in Raleigh, North Carolina. I do community organizing. So the things, what I do on my end, I do a lot of awareness, like in terms of, like they teach our children about STDs in the schools and or sex education and drug education. Well, I give my own sex education and drug education classes, you know. And so the name I go by is Shaka Zulu, and, you know, so the children know me as that. And so my own – so yes, I'm doing my own thing on my end, and I have this radio show to reach out to as many people as possible. The sister that just got off the that just got offline – Sister Kim, she have an organization. Yeah, she have an organization called Save Our Sons. And so the organization that I was in, that's how I met her. And you know, and she do a lot of things for the little brothers that's in trouble with the law, because she deal with the judges, she deal with the lawyers, she deal with the judicial system. And so that's the sister that joined, and I'm glad that she joined. So. So I'm glad you asked that question, but you can go ahead with your other statement.
Oh, that's all I was going to say for now. My voice is feeling terrible right now.
Oh, you didn't have anything else to say?
No, my throat is going out. So that's all I was going to say for now.
All right. So, all right. Thank you, sister, for calling in. So if anybody else have anything to say, you can unmute your phone. Because you're
already on the air.
Okay. Yeah. Do anybody else have anything to say? All right. So I'm going to go ahead, because my show is 2 hours. I set it to that limit for a reason, because sometimes an hour ain't just long enough. But I hope everybody join in next week as I talk about other problems that plague the black community. Thank you all for tuning in to We Talk Productions, the only station talking about black problems and black solutions. This is the elephant in the room, and I'm your host, Shaka Zulu, a.k.a. Jamarion Harris.
And also, my show, Black Urban America, come on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I'm Kenny Jones. That's it, Shaka?
Okay. Hold it now! Of a TV station.